All right.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world. Happy Thursday, everybody. Today is July 2nd, 2026. And man, there is a lot going on in the world today. We've had a couple of slow news days to start the month and to wrap up June, but man, did that all change about midday yesterday. So the top story going on at the moment, we got the non-farm payrolls report today. Not great, Bob. As a matter of fact, the jobs report, it pretty much sucked. 57,000 jobs were added for the month of June. Hey, job gains, that's a good thing, right? Not so much. The market was expecting 110,000. So we got only half of the gains that the market was expecting. Worse yet was the downward revisions. Stop me if you've heard this one before. Big downward revisions to prior months. 31,000 revised down in April. May was revised down by 43,000. So if you factor in the downward revisions to prior months, subtract that from the payrolls that were gained, we actually lost 17,000 jobs for the month of June. The unemployment rate ticked down to 4.2% from 4.3%. Hey, that's good news, right? No, not so fast. The labor force participation rate dropped by 0.3 of a point to 61.5, down from 61.8. What do those two data points mean? It means people gave up trying to find work and just said, the hell with it, I'll be unemployed. And so, yeah, unemployment dropped because everybody else just gave up hope. That again, not great, Bob. This jobs report, it sucked. In the establishment survey, which counts workers versus the which counts companies hiring people, there was just terrible news. And it was worse in the household survey. Full-time jobs in the household survey down 514,000 for the month of June. Part-time jobs down 141,000. Multiple job holders up by 126,000. So a lot of people lost work and a lot of people had to get a second job to make ends meet. And then last but not least, self-employed unincorporated, which is pretty much farmers and gig workers, that fell by 94,000. Guys, there's not a whole lot to like in this jobs report. The only saving grace here is the Fed rate cuts. Initially, the market caught a little bit of a bounce on this report because it was so bad. Everybody said, maybe Kevin Warsh won't raise rates and kill us all. But the market is slowly coming to the realization that Kevin Warsh has kind of told us he's more worried about inflation than the job market right now. This jobs report wasn't good. And I would also add that the jobs report should have been especially good because we've got the World Cup going on in the U.S., and you had a lot of restaurants, a lot of hotels hired extra staffing for the influx of tourism. So we should be seeing somewhere between 50 and 100,000 jobs added temporarily from World Cup. And so take that away, we would have a deeply, deeply negative number for the month of June. Bad jobs report to start the day. But wait, there's more. Meta sent markets reeling yesterday when the story leaked that they are planning to rent out excess AI compute capacity. You may recall SpaceX did exactly that just a couple of weeks ago when they announced they were renting out one of their data centers to Anthropic. Google's doing something similar. Meta initially shot up 9% on this news yesterday. CoreWeave and Nebius, the NeoClouds, just took a dump on this, both down high double digits yesterday. So what's really going on here? Meta has just made the tacit admission that they built too many data centers and they have nothing to do with them. And so now they're just going to rent them out. The problem is, rent them out to who? SpaceX is going to rent them out. Meta's going to rent them out. CoreWeave's going to rent them out. Nebius is going to rent them out. Who's actually buying? Who's actually using them? Two companies that lose money hand over fist that are hopelessly dependent on an endless supply of new investor capital coming in order to be able to afford to rent that compute. Guys, it's exactly what I've been saying for years. They built too much of this crap. There was never any real demand for it. It was all just a round-trip revenue scheme used to artificially inflate demand and spin a hype story. And now it's all coming crashing down. Now look, Meta stock rallied on this, probably because Meta has done nothing but spend money on AI since this bubble started. I mean, they had their Llama model. That was a bust. A couple of months ago, they came out. What did they call it? I can't remember. Muse Spark, I think was the name of it. Oh my God. Who came up with the name Muse Spark for their AI product? That was never even released to developers. So Meta spent all this money and has yet to unveil a product. And now they're like, we're giving up. We're just going to rent out the data centers we built. Hopefully get some revenue out of that. But again, the NeoCloud business, the NeoClouds all lose money too. So I really don't know why Meta stock rallied on this news, but the move in CoreWeave and Nebius was telling. We have built too many freaking data centers. But wait, this morning, SoftBank says, hold my sake, because SoftBank, they plan to rent out excess AI compute as well. I kid you not. SB Neo Inc. is going to be the name of this company, and they'll start renting out compute next year. All right, well, so now we've got SpaceX, Meta, and SoftBank are all NeoClouds. A lot of people selling picks and shovels out there. A lot of people, right? And is anybody actually using picks and shovels? And the people who are using picks and shovels, have any of them dug up any gold? But no, we'll just trot out people on CNBC, give more interviews, talking about, oh, it's better to be selling the picks and shovels of the gold rush that is the AI boom. And I'm just sitting here like Samuel L. Jackson, just thinking to myself, say picks and shovels again, mother. God, double dog dare you. Nobody is making any money on these things. They're all burning it. And it's all coming to a head. Maybe that's why South Korean stocks sold off another 8% yesterday. These near 10% moves in South Korean stocks are becoming almost a daily occurrence. How many times have we reported on a big move in the Kospi index over the last 2 weeks? Volatility usually marks the top. Oh, but wait, NVIDIA is getting in on it this morning as well. I love the headline. I love the way the permabulls at CNBC spin this story. The headline says, NVIDIA offers startup customers chance to swap compute for revenue share. Oh, NVIDIA offers customers. It's a new offering. All right, revenue share. NVIDIA is going to be making money. Here's what's really going on in this story. NVIDIA is backstopping the sale of their own product to these new neo clouds that are setting up in Singapore and I forget, Australia, I think was the other one. NVIDIA is backstopping their own sales by renting back the GPUs that they're selling to these companies. And then those GPUs that they're renting back, they're giving away compute credits to AI startups in exchange for shares of any money that they ever make, which none of them make any money, which is nothing. This is just NVIDIA buying their own product from themselves using multiple companies as intermediaries to make it seem above board. It's just another version of round tripping. So, I mean, pretty much NVIDIA is a Neo Cloud now too. Everybody's going to be a Neo Cloud. I'm going to start melonheadneo.com, take the company public, and we'll raise a few billion dollars at a modest, you'll say, $50 billion valuation. A week later, I'll dump some bonds on the market. I'll go on CNBC, talk about how the demand is insatiable, sell all my stock to, you know, dump it into the retail enthusiasm that I generate, sail off into the sunset with my billions, and then just say, gosh, I'm sorry, the whole thing went up in flames when it turns out there was never any real demand for it. Why not? Work for Michael and Trader. Oracle came out yesterday. Oracle's out with an annual report. Included a section that reads like the end of a pharmaceutical commercial, line after line after line about reasons why their build out of data centers is risky and why it may not work out for them. It's like the end of the drug commercial when they're like, side effects include fever, headache, nausea, explosive diarrhea, rectal bleeding, accidentally tearing a hole in the fabric of space and time, opening a gateway to a dimension of pure evil. Oh my God, what's in this stuff? Yeah, that's what came out in Oracle's annual report yesterday. And rounding out the AI stories this morning, a lot of giving the United States government a 5% stake, or at least that's the proposal. And I went and I checked everywhere. I saw that they're giving the government. I saw that they are ceding the government a 5% stake. I saw that they were offering or granting the government a 5% stake. Nowhere in any of these articles did I see that the government was considering buying this 5% stake. So Sam Altman, you know, the effective altruist, and you can always trust an effective altruist named Sam, right? Apparently, out of the goodness of his heart, he is giving away 5% of his near trillion-dollar company to the government so that we can all be rich. What a nice guy he is. I mean, it's not like, I don't know, do we need to do this? Would Sam be, I don't know, getting something in exchange for that 5%, some kind of implicit guarantee from the government, some kind of barriers to entry that might prevent competition from taking away business from him? I don't know, maybe agreements not to prosecute him for the biggest accounting fraud in history. What might Sam be getting for that 5%? Or maybe he's just a swell guy and he wants to help people out. I mean, everything we've learned about Sam Altman and his personal life and the way he conducts business, there's no reason to suggest he might have any ulterior motives, right? All right, last but not least, we got to end the show with a warning about private equity and private credit. We've got the head of BlackRock's private credit fund. He is leaving. Oh, why? I mean, it's like BlackRock can't take a joke. The guy's losing his job. Maybe because they twice had to mark down their assets this year. Maybe because the fund has lost 55% in the last year. Maybe because federal prosecutors are investigating BlackRock's fund for valuation practices. Okay. Maybe that's why the guy's leaving, or maybe he's just exploring other opportunities or spend time with family. Who knows? Guys, there is a lot going on in the world today. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world. But first, please hit that like button and you new guys hit that subscribe button so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this every single day. And the S&P 500 right now is higher by 22 points or 0.29%. You'll notice this green candle here. That was the initial market reaction to the non-farm payrolls report. The market liked the report because it was so bad. Maybe the Fed doesn't hike this year. And then eventually people realize, oh, that's right. Kevin Warsh said he pretty much doesn't care. The Dow is higher by 195 points, 0.38% to the upside. Similar reaction of the market and then giving back those gains down or higher by about 0.4%. And the NASDAQ is up 104 points, 0.35% to the upside. Stocks are up pretty much across the board this morning, but just barely. We'll see if that lasts. One of the reasons we have a significantly weaker dollar this morning, the Dixie is at 100.77, down 65 basis points. All right, what is going on with the Dixie here? Guys, I think number one, you can see it here, right? We had a big drop this morning. That was on the non-farm payrolls report. That is, again, the market saying less aggressive Fed, maybe slightly more dovish than they've been. And so the dollar weakened a little bit on that. But the U.S. dollar was already down by about 30 basis points when that report came out. And that is because of the Japanese yen. Notice the USD-JPY chart. We've been warning about this for the last couple of days. We had a big drop overnight. Now, nobody knows if this was the Japanese finance ministry intervening in the Forex market, but a lot of people suspect they were. And it's possible that people are just so jittery about the finance ministry intervening that it became a self-fulfilling prophecy and everybody decided to front run it. We got this one this morning. Japan's yen jumps with traders twitchy about intervention risk. The yen jumps suddenly against the dollar on Thursday, with traders alert to the prospect of intervention from Japan to prop up its stubbornly weak currency and jumpy about a possible new approach to currency buying from Japanese officials. It was not immediately clear what drove the move or whether Japanese authorities were in the market, with traders speculating that a possible rate check had taken place. The rally appeared smaller than after previous bouts of intervention. All right, so let's talk about that. First of all, about half of this move happened just in the last few minutes after the jobs report. So this was a much smaller move than we've seen after prior interventions, like this one here on, I believe it was May 4th. And then a couple of days later, there was another move. All right, and again, we only had about half of this move at the time that article was written. So it was a much smaller reaction from the market than previously. Now, it's possible that the Japanese are just losing control and the interventions are becoming less and less effective. That Reuters article also mentioned a rate check may have caused it. And a rate check is basically when the finance ministry calls up one of these prime brokers and says, "Hi, this is Jack from the government. Let's say hypothetically I was to dump a whole bunch of dollars on the open market to buy yen. What kind of price would you quote me?" And then they hang up the phone. And that trader says, "Holy shit." And he calls all of his friends and he says, "The government just called me asking for a price. They're about to intervene," and everybody starts front running. So it's possible this was just a rate check that happened last night and the market overreacted to it. But either way, the yen a lot stronger this morning because of the suspected intervention or jitters about the intervention. And then it got even stronger after that because the dollar weakened on that less than stellar jobs report. Looking over at Bitcoin, $61,800 for Bitcoin. It's up by about $1,800 this morning as priced on Coinbase. Bitcoin caught a bid after that jobs report. Again, less aggressive Fed would be good for Bitcoin, which is of course, very vulnerable to swings in liquidity. Looking over at the bond market, we've got a mixed bag this morning. The 30-year yield is higher by 2.5 points at 4.992. The 10-year yield is higher by about 1 point, 4.483%. The 2-year yield is at 4.135. That is lower by 3 basis points. And the 1 month is lower by 0.5 point at 3.615. Looking over at commodities, I can tell you the dollar is the weaker dollar and the quiet in the bond market. Very good for precious metals this morning. Gold is having a good morning, up $84, $4,114. That's higher by 2%. Weaker dollar, less prospects for higher interest rates. That is rocket fuel for gold. Spot silver right behind, up by $1.90 at $61 even this morning, 3% higher. I like the shiny. Copper is higher by a fraction of a percent. Platinum is higher by 1.6%. Palladium higher by 2.7%. And oil's hanging out here at 67.66 for August WTI futures, lower by 93 cents more this morning. Not a lot of Iran news this morning. Oil just continues to grind lower. All right, let's talk about the jobs report that came in. This is the Bureau of Labor Statistics website where they release the non-farm payrolls or the employment situation summary. Both total non-farm payroll employment of higher than by 57,000 and the unemployment rate of 4.2% changed little in June. The USBLS reported today employment continued to trend up in professional and business services, social assistance, and healthcare. Leisure and hospitality lost jobs. That leisure and hospitality losing jobs is really unexpected. A lot of people were expecting big gains in that category from the World Cup being hosted in the U.S., so that was surprising there. Let's talk about some of the categories here. Employment in professional and business services continued to trend up by 36,000. The industry has added 172,000 jobs since the recent low in October. Social assistance added 25,000, primarily in individual and family services. In June, employment in healthcare continued its upward trend by 22,000, but at a slower pace than average. And again, leisure and hospitality declined by 61,000 in June, reflecting weaker than usual seasonal hiring. But we also have to talk about revisions here, guys. The change in total non-farm payroll employment from April was revised down by 31,000, from 179,000 gain to just 148,000. And the change in May was revised down by 43,000 from 172K down to 129K. With these revisions, employment in April and May combined is 74,000 lower than previously reported, which means you've got a net loss of 17,000 jobs based on this report. This was not a good report, guys. But wait, there's more. We have got the unemployment rate. All right, 4.2% in June, down from 4.3% where it had been hanging out for a couple of months. That's great news, right? Fewer people are out of work. No, that's not what that means. Unemployment only counts people who want to work. And if you look at labor force participation rate here, 61.5% down from 61.8% the prior month. That means people are giving up and they're dropping out of the labor force. And therefore, it's showing up as a decline in unemployment. It doesn't mean more people are working. It just means people quit. And if you look here, the labor force participation rate at 61.5, that is the lowest we have been at since May of 2021. And in May of 2021, we were still recovering from the pandemic and all the money was being printed and the stimmies were flowing. Not good here, guys. This is a lot of dejected people. Also, let's check out table A9 real quick in the jobs report. This is where they break down some of the changes in different sectors. For example, part-time versus full-time work. This number here is the current month, June, and then this is the May number. That number declined for full-time workers down by 514,000. Almost half or over half a million people lost full-time jobs last month, according to the household survey. Again, the household survey counts people. They call it people. Are you working? What kind of work do you have? The establishment survey calls up businesses. Are you hiring? How many people did you hire? And the two surveys have been wildly different. On the part-time front, though, typically when you see a loss of full-time jobs, you see gains in part-time. We did not get that this time. Part-time jobs declined by 141,000. We've also got multiple job holders, people getting a second job to make ends meet. That rose by 126,000. All right. It's good that at least those 126,000 people were able to find part-time work, but it sucks that they had to begin with. And self-employed, unincorporated workers, that counts your farm workers and your gig work. That one also dropped by about 94,000. Guys, this jobs report was really dreadful. All right, back onto my favorite subject, the AI bubble. Meta building cloud business to sell excess AI capacity, Bloomberg News reports. And right away, I have to draw your attention to that phrase, excess AI capacity. Where the hell did that come from? Because every one of these a-holes that they trot out in the financial media always tells me that the demand is insatiable. The demand is insane. We don't have enough compute. We're compute restrained. We're compute short. Where did this excess capacity come from? Somebody's lying. Meta Platforms is building a cloud business to sell excess artificial intelligence compute capacity, Bloomberg reported Wednesday, as tech giants seek returns on costly AI investments amid worries about overspending. The plans are still in development. The strategy could change, the report said, citing people familiar with the matter. Neo cloud companies CoreWeave and Nebius fell 10.8% and 12.4% respectively on concerns that the move could reduce spending on their services by Meta, a key customer, while adding to competition. Now, that's interesting here. Meta is currently a customer of the NeoClouds. Meta rents compute capacity from CoreWeave and Nebius. But now Meta is renting out their excess capacity. So does that mean, number one, is Meta is now competing with CoreWeave and Nebius? But also, if Meta has excess capacity to rent out, why would they continue to rent in CoreWeave and Nebius's product? What a mess. Competing directly with top cloud providers Amazon, Microsoft, and Alphabet could help Meta tap booming demand for AI services from businesses while reducing its reliance on the advertising market. But analysts said it also deepened doubts about the social media giant's efforts to catch up with leading AI labs such as Anthropic, an effort that CEO Mark Zuckerberg has backed with billions of dollars in investment. It's actually hundreds of billions of dollars in investment, including setting off a talent war last year. Meta in April unveiled Muse Spark. Oh, what a terrible name. The first AI model from a costly team that it assembled, but one it is yet to release to developers. A Wall Street Journal report said last month that it has no scheduled date for the launch. All right, let's talk about this. Meta has failed to create an AI product that they can sell. That's the only possible explanation here. They released their Llama, they released their Muse Spark. They're making no money from any of it. So what are they doing now? They're like, well, we built all these data centers. We took out all this Enron-esque off-balance sheet debt to pay for it. Might as well rent them out. All right? It's GPU B&B. That's what they're doing with this stuff. And, of course, all the other people who rent out GPUs are like, crap, there goes our business. But look, Meta shareholders bought this yesterday. The stock actually rallied about 8 or 9%. Now, the stock is down this morning by about 1.8%, giving back some of those gains. But I guess Meta shareholders were like, at least there's going to be some revenue coming in. It's probably going to be at a loss. And Meta is not the only one doing this. SoftBank plans to rent AI compute in the U.S. at 10 gigawatt scale. Boy, a lot of people seem awfully motivated. Anybody notice? I mean, we're told everything is GPU constrained. There's not enough compute. There's not enough capacity. And yet everybody seems to have capacity to rent out. That's a mystery. SoftBank and its telecom unit will start renting AI compute resources to U.S. companies next fiscal year using a growing pipeline of data centers to compete with the likes of CoreWeave and Nebius. It is not a good day for CoreWeave and Nebius. The two SoftBank companies will set up SB Neo Inc. to offer AI chips and cloud services to big companies, including hyperscalers, the company said in a statement Thursday. The so-called NeoCloud venture plans to ramp up its computing resources to eventually supply data center capacity at a scale of 10 gigawatts by around 2030 for large-scale AI model training and inference, according to somebody I can't pronounce, the head of their telecom unit. SoftBank is joining a crowded cloud services field as concerns grow about potential overcapacity. The largest U.S. firms are planning to spend $725 billion on building AI infrastructure this year alone. At the same time, many executives point to a historic super cycle of demand as artificial intelligence permeates industries and households. Yeah, all those industries and households are currently scaling back because of the sticker shock of token maxing, and they're hiring back all the people that they laid off and fired because AI made a mess And now they're having to bring those people back. Well, yeah, it's a super cycle and demand is insane, all that other crap. And it's not just SoftBank. And it's not just SpaceX. And it's not just Meta. Look at this one. NVIDIA offers startup customers chance to swap compute power for revenue share. And what CNBC is not saying is this is NVIDIA backstopping their own sales. NVIDIA is buying their own freaking product from themselves using multiple companies as intermediaries. And for whatever reason, the financial press refuses to call them out on it. Well, because they're permeables in the financial press and they have to do that because all their advertisers are dependent on it. Chipmaker NVIDIA says it's entering revenue sharing agreements with fast-growing startups in a move which will see customers swap access to compute power for a slice of future profits. Are these future profits in the room with us now, NVIDIA? The artificial intelligence chip leader says its new partnership program announced Thursday offers fast-growing AI startups token credits to power their development. Cloud-based AI firms, model builders, and other enterprises will share both product and cloud revenue with NVIDIA, which is positioning itself as an intermediary helping startups gain direct access to full-stack computing powered by NVIDIA chips. In its announcement, NVIDIA named two initial partners who will provide the compute power behind the scheme. Australia-based Sharon AI will deploy 40,000 NVIDIA GPUs, while Singapore AI infrastructure company Firmus Technologies says it is building a data center in Batam, Indonesia, which is expected to scale to 360 megawatts and house up to 170,000 NVIDIA GPUs. In other words, in order to guarantee those sales to those neoclouds overseas, NVIDIA is selling the GPUs and then immediately renting them back. And then NVIDIA has no freaking use for the thing. So what are they going to do? They're going to offer compute credits or token credits to startup companies who have no money to pay them to rent their products. So they're just going to give it to them in exchange for a share of future profits, which may or may not ever exist in the first place. In other words, NVIDIA is buying its own product once again. How many examples of this do we have now of this round-tripping scheme and the various different methodologies they're using? And again, when the bubble bursts and everybody loses money, then the financial press will come out and start drawing attention to this stuff instead of doing these focus group tested rosy headlines about offering startup customers compute power for revenue shares instead of backstopping their own scales using a centuries-old revenue scheme. And all of this news, of course, caused problems once again in South Korea. Korean stocks tumble 8% as AI jitters trigger chip sell-off. Another one, South Korean stocks were hit by renewed doubts over the sustainability of the AI build-out boom, which drove a sell-off in chip makers that have so far underpinned the market's world-beating performance. The Kospi Index closed down nearly 8%, with SK Hynix losing almost 15% and Samsung falling 9.1%. Combined, the two chip heavyweights lost $290 billion in value on Thursday. Korean Exchange temporarily suspended program selling following an outsized drop in Kospi and Kosdaq futures. Another circuit breaker triggered in South Korea. And look, these two companies, Samsung and SK Hynix, are like 50% of the Kospi Index, just those two companies. The losses come after Meta plans to sell computing power, raised questions over excess AI capacity, and triggered a rout in U.S. tech shares. Korean chipmakers sit at the heart of the supply chain and have so far thrived on surging demand for advanced hardware. Yet their epic rally, with share prices tripling this year at their peaks, has also left the pair vulnerable to sudden shifts in AI trade sentiment as questions emerge on the durability of the CapEx expansion. The Meta excess compute story has made investors question whether hyperscalers are building more AI capacity than they can use profitably. No, it doesn't question it. It proves that they are. All right. If they have excess capacity to rent out and everybody renting GPUs is losing money, then we have our answer. They have built too much. And no, they can't make a profit with it. Why are we still phrasing this like a question? It's not freaking Jeopardy. Anyways, the market is probably starting to price in peak memory cycle risk after a very strong run, you think? Look at the Kospi Index. Look at another big drop yesterday, 8% lower. How many of these big moves? There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I mean, 8 near double-digit moves in the South Korean index over the last 2 months. Also note these 3 distinct waves of volatility that we've got here. And are we about to make a lower low than the prior one? this chart looks like it is getting ready to roll over, and it's going to roll over hard, guys. I don't know when it's going to be, but it is going to be a sharp and very impressive red candle to the downside when this bubble finally goes. And Oracle is warning of that very bubble as well with their annual report yesterday. Oracle's data center warning is a worst-case scenario for the whole AI boom. The cloud giant outlined all the ways its massive investments in AI infrastructure could blow up in its face. Oracle founded all the way back in 1977 as an enterprise software company. Since then, they've transformed into a cloud services giant. These days, it's trying to become one of the most important players in AI data centers. But now Oracle itself is warning investors that this next act comes with some huge risks. The tech giant filed its annual report late in June, and it includes a long list of ways its massive AI infrastructure bet could fail to pay off. In the annual filing, Oracle warned investors that none of this is guaranteed. Here is just a selection of the potential pitfalls Oracle says it faces: overbuilding, customer defaults, excess leases, stranded capacity, credit risk, power shortages, GPU shortages, site shortages, permitting delays, construction delays, contractor failures, zoning fights, environmental rules, water limits, grid strain, fixed price contracts, volatile power costs, supplier delays, shipping disruptions, tariff shocks, export controls, geopolitical instability, obsolete hardware, service outages, security flaws, AI errors, biased outputs, copyright exposure, privacy risks, patchwork regulation, compute restrictions, cross-border limits, weak adoption, competitor advances, legal liability, and reputational damages. Ask your doctor about Oracle. That's what that sounds like. Oh, my God. We operate in a rapidly changing economic and technological environment that presents numerous risks, many of which are driven by factors that we cannot control or predict, the company wrote in the filing. One of the risks the company highlighted was that its customers may not be able to pay their bills, something we've talked about a lot on this channel. In addition, some of our customers may be highly leveraged and subject to their own operating and regulatory risks. And even if our credit review and analysis mechanisms work properly, we may experience risks of non-payment and non-performance in our dealings with such parties. That risk is especially important because companies like OpenAI and Anthropic are still spending far more money than they bring in. At the same time, federal and local governments are beginning to scrutinize the industry more closely, especially over their energy use and potential cybersecurity risks. Oracle just double dog daring you to buy their stock this morning. It's up about $2, $145.38, but that is an ugly looking chart for Oracle. You can see the head and shoulders there. This one's not going to be pretty when this one drops. Meanwhile, in the most suspicious story of the day, we will don the tinfoil hat for this one because we're going to need it. OpenAI proposes giving the U.S. government a 5% stake, Financial Times says. Out of the goodness of their heart, because Sam Altman is just such a magnanimous fella. He really is. He's a philanthropist. OpenAI has begun preliminary discussions about giving the U.S. government a 5% stake in the ChatGPT developer, the Financial Times reported, citing two people familiar with the talks. And again, not selling. They're saying giving. And I have searched high and low. I cannot find one example in any article where they talk about a price tag or the government buying. I have seen the words grant, cede, give, offer, never buy, sell, or anything like that. OpenAI CEO Sam Altman and other executives proposed that move as part of a broader arrangement under which Washington would hold 5% of each of the leading U.S. AI developers. That might include Anthropic, Google, and Meta platforms, though it's unclear if those other firms would agree with the proposal. Altman had floated the idea of government stakes in major AI firms with the Trump administration as early as 2025. The CEO is arguing that giving the public a slice of his company was the best way to share upside from the AI boom. Yeah, Sam Altman doesn't share, guys. I'm sorry. That's just not the kind of guy he is. President Trump has expressed interest in the U.S. government holding equity stakes in leading firms via government-run wealth funds that would redistribute some of the financial windfall to the public. But there is no financial windfall. All these companies lose money. He said he's spoken with companies about the idea without offering specifics. It remains unclear how the government would acquire equity in AI ventures. Since Trump's return to office, the administration has invested in about a dozen companies, including several involved in critical minerals industry, and pledged to take a stake in as much as 10% in Intel. So that last paragraph is somewhat suggesting that the government may be buying this stake, but I couldn't find anything about pricing or even referencing the government buying anywhere else other than that. And again, if OpenAI is really going to give the government a 5% stake, what are they getting in return? There's something there we can't see. And of course, we've got to talk about private credit to end the show, private credit or private equity. BlackRock's head of troubled private credit fund to exit after losses. The head of BlackRock's beleaguered private credit fund is in the process of leaving the firm, a move that follows months of losses on soured loans and revelations of a U.S. regulatory probe into the unit's valuation practices. Phil Tseng, chief executive officer of the publicly traded BlackRock TCP Capital Corp., remains an employee of the world's largest asset manager for now, according to people familiar with the matter. It's unclear when he'll depart, and plans haven't been finalized, people said, asking not to be identified. BlackRock TCP Capital is a publicly traded business development company that pools together private credit loans. The vehicle has struggled after a series of troubled investments forced it to mark down the net asset value of its assets twice this year by 19% in January and another 5% in May. Federal prosecutors at the Manhattan U.S. Attorney's Office have also been scrutinizing the fund's valuation practices in recent months and have questioned executives as part of the probe, Bloomberg reported in May. All right, there's a lot going on here. Number one, this guy is out. Why is he out? Because BlackRock lies about how much these loans are worth. Case in point, the company advertises the net asset value of these things, and they'll say, oh yeah, we're down by 19% and then another 5%. So BlackRock has marked this down by some 25, 28% year to date. But look, the fund, the publicly traded business development company, this is the stock, TCPC, has lost 55% of its value, while the company claims it's only lost 25-ish percent of its value. So the public is willing to pay a lot less for this debt than BlackRock is claiming it's worth. In other words, BlackRock is lying about what that debt is worth. And that's why they're under investigation from federal prosecutors. And that's why they've lost all of this money. Investors know they're lying about it. And that's why this guy is quitting. And I have been warning about this for years. These funds are full of assets that are not worth what they advertise. Now, keep in mind, this is just the publicly traded one. Not all of these business development companies or private credit funds are publicly traded. The ones that are not publicly traded have all gated redemptions because the investors want their money back. And they can't give it to them because their assets are not worth what they're saying. So you either have publicly traded BDCs that are down big time year over year, or non-publicly traded ones that are gating redemptions. All in all, it's an industry that is terrified of price discovery because they're lying about what this debt is worth. And look, guys, this is pretty much a snapshot of the U.S. economy. If you take away data centers, this is what you're left with. Not a good look. And I just want to say thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with us, Melonheads, this morning. Don't forget all that algorithmic good stuff like the like button and the subscribe button so I can see you tomorrow. It's going to be a wild one today, guys. I don't know. It seems like there is a lot happening all of a sudden. But in the meantime, I just want to say thank you very much to my magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee for supporting the channel. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time. Live small. Dream big.